understand that the things that happen outside of ourselves, or even the things that we feel, are just pieces of information for us to use to craft a path in the direction that serves us most. Once we can accept that everything that we believe is just a figment of our imagination, we can go really far in life. What you feel is just...
Are you stuck in a job that feels more like a trap than a career you're passionate about? Our guest today will guide us through how to take control, reframe fear, and design a life for us where work aligns with our values. Welcome to the Learn It All podcast, the show for today's leaders who want to get ahead and stay ahead because we believe that great leaders aren't born or made, we're constantly in the making. I'm your host, Damon Lemby, two-time best-selling author and CEO of Learn It, a live learning platform that has helped upskill over 2 million people over the past 3 decades. In a moment, I'm going to be joined by Dr. Benjamin Ritter. Ben is a best-selling author, executive coach, and podcast host with over 20 years of experience coaching more than 500 clients and over 10,000 leaders globally through his workshops. I'll be asking Ben to share his thoughts on the key to becoming fearless, how to build trust with senior leaders, and the secrets to building executive presence, and much, much more.
Let's start with your story and hear how you ended up where you are today. In fact, I think, Damon, you wanted to jump in, especially with the sports connection, right?
So I thought that soccer was going to be my professional career. And unlike some people that decide they want to do something for a living, I made it my life. And so that meant that I only watched soccer on TV, like VHS tapes, had many of them, recorded games, watched them again, practiced 3 or 4 times a day outside of the actual practice that I had. I was thinking about how do I get better? So I changed my diet and my fitness routine as well. And honestly, it was kind of like a negative Nancy. Like I judged people around me that weren't dedicated to something. And so pushed away a lot of friends and social relationships and parties and all that stuff. And the problem with that was I didn't become a professional soccer player. And I wasn't the best on the team. I mean, Dad used to say, you know, do you want to be the tail of the lion or the head of the fox? I was generally the head of the fox and unhappy with being the tail of the lion. And so I developed some pretty bad like confidence and self-esteem issues. And so when I lost soccer, and I was actually told by one of my soccer coaches that he wasn't my effing therapist when I asked him for help on how to get over my mindset and how to figure out how to be confident in myself, I had to figure out what to do. And luckily, instead of giving up and digging a hole and going to sleep in it, I took that same passion, resilience, and dedication. And instead of turning it to something else that was outside of me, I turned it on myself. And so that led me to find the world of personal and professional development and be okay and accept that my goal for the next however many years was to literally just go to explore life. And so I got super curious. I dove into the fields of influence, social psychology, confidence, and through that, ended up becoming pretty happy with not really caring about anything. The problem with that is when you don't care about anything, and the things that you do try to do don't work out, you end up in a pretty negative headspace and pretty resentful towards your career. I was happy with myself. I was really angry at my career because I actually initially after soccer went into nutrition. They canceled my major halfway through the program. I then thought, okay, I'm not going to do nutrition, not going to do soccer. Well, what's next? Public health. I went to public health. I had a job working for the state government. They cut my job due to budgets. I then had 4 other job offers, all cut due to budgets over almost a 3-year time period in the same field. So I was like, oh, that's not working out. Went and actually got hired and networked into a field in healthcare and got promoted into a leadership role, got selected for a leadership development program, but at the same time had pretty toxic leadership and then a pretty toxic mindset because I believed in myself again, blamed my organization and my job for everything that was happening to me. But luckily at that point in time, I actually had a mentor. Guess what? I had a coach. And he created for the first time ever in my career, a very safe space to explore who I was and what I cared about without the negative limiting beliefs that I had from soccer, from the layoffs, from the budget cuts, like literally just challenged me without judgment, with pure curiosity. And through those reflections, through that questioning, I realized what I was doing, that I was playing the victim instead of being proactive in my career. that somewhere along the lines, I gave up on what a job potentially could be, and that I was giving away my most important asset, my power. And through some self-reflection, I realized that where I really wanted to go were the things that really pissed me off. I wanted to help people feel confident. I wanted to create an environment where they could succeed. And I wanted to help people not only be confident, but feel accountable for their career success. And coaching played a pretty big role in my life up to then. Like, I didn't say this, but I was selected for a public health coaching program to help individuals that were trying to figure out what to do in their career. I was actually funded from the federal government, which is hilarious because they couldn't afford for a job, but they could afford to pay for coaching for me. And then I got actually recruited kind of as a side hustle and side job, since I'm an entrepreneur now, to go coach, do like a men's program across the United States due to my own learning around confidence and social psychology and such. So adding all this together, kind of doing a career audit in a safe space without judgment, I realized that I wanted to go into the field of leadership and talent development. And I finally felt empowered for my career. So I went to my VP at the time and said, this is what I want to do. How do we make it happen? Now, the path from there to where I am today is very long. And there is a lot of speed bumps along the way. But the difference is those speed bumps didn't steer me off my path. The speed bumps were just like something that I dealt with. It's like, oh, information. What am I going to do with this information now? And so I kept going. And now here we are.
I mean, that's a great journey. And all the different, whether you want to call them bumps in the road, changes, or adapting, that is typically something that people can learn later on in their career. How did you so early on learn how to have an open mind and being flexible to be able to make these adjustments and changes over time?
It was like the chicken or the egg, right? Like, what came first? Did I have the traits that I needed to do the things that I'm doing today, or did I learn them along the way because of the failures that I faced? I don't know. I really don't. I think that despite soccer not working out, it taught me a lot of things, a lot of really great traits that I had to help me be kind of dedicated, manage time. But like, where did the not buying into what a career should be come from? Is that from my dad from when I was a kid? Because he was an entrepreneur, where he would take me to go fix homes. You know, I was knee deep in sewage with a sump pump, you know, trying to clean out basements or putting up drywall. Did it come from him? But then he could have also given me the stubbornness to not accept what a career should be and be terrible with authority. But my mom worked a full-time job working for a university. So where did this mindset of don't buy into the traditional 9-to-5, create the path that you want that works best for you? And I just kind of fell off of it because of some disappointment. I think that tends to be what happens is, I think we all have this level of empowerment or we have this idea of what's possible in our minds, but then we have a bad boss, or we get one negative piece of feedback at some time in our career, or we get laid off one time, and all of a sudden now we start acting out of fear, or we just kind of say, I'm out. I don't want to play this game anymore. It's not fun. And for some reason though, like through that mentor, at that point in my career, I took everything for like that I was hiding for my career. Like, I was applying it in my personal life, and I realized that I needed to become more proactive in my professional life.
It sounds like part of what you were saying is very early on, a way that you dealt with, you know, not having the success with soccer, you know, kind of having your life go the way that you pictured, was that you adopted this attitude of not caring so much, which helped you to a certain extent in your personal life, but it wasn't really the answer, because you needed to find a way to also care in the workplace. And I can relate to that journey. It's like, I need to just not care so much. But the answer is to like not care. In fact, you talk about in your book about kind of like embracing caring and embracing this feeling that you're like never going to do enough, but that's okay. So that's an interesting paradox that I don't know everybody has really been able to travel that journey enough to get to the other side of how do I go from not caring to actually caring in a healthy way?
Yeah. The problem I initially had was I cared way too much about something that wasn't within my control, and I didn't believe in myself enough. So then the solution was, well, forget caring about anything. Just go believe in yourself. But then what ends up happening is you get a little overconfident, and you kind of push away the people and the things that might actually help you succeed. And so it's about caring in a way that serves you. That's really what becoming fearless is. And the first talk I ever gave was this like TEDx talk. And it was about how finding my purpose was the worst advice I ever received. Because I was this kid, and I think it's a terrible piece of advice to give someone that doesn't have any context or doesn't have a mentor to talk to. was this kid that was told, find your purpose, make it your life. That's what I did. I found the thing I cared about most, soccer, and I made it my life, become a professional athlete. Terrible. Because I defined my self-identity to it. I gave up any sort of sense of balance to it. And we see that with managers today, or executives, or maybe professionals that want to grow in their career, that are just like, I have to get to the next level. I have to do the next thing. This is who I am. And they overwork, they burn out, and the things they care about, they can't care about anymore because they're in a state of sustained stress. So the goal is to, at least what I realize and when I try to teach others, is your purpose, or whatever you create, whatever you decide you want to focus on, doesn't have to be called your purpose, can be anything, is something that you chose. And it's something that you created. And my mistake when I was younger was thinking that the thing that I was trying to achieve was greater than me. Once I achieve this thing, I will become greater because I will merge with this thing and become more, whatever it is. But really, the thing that I wanted only existed because I wanted it. And so no matter what, I was always greater than it. And so if that thing ever stopped serving me, then it wasn't something that, like, I had to figure out how to help it serve me, how to figure out, like, how do I navigate, how do I interact with this thing that I want in a way that helps my life, not the thing. When I kind of was lost in my career, I realized that I stopped using my career as a tool to add value to my life and to serve the things I cared about, to serve my values. Because my values served me. So how do I use my values that I created based on my experiences? I've made them important to create more value in my career and in my life. And your career doesn't have to. A lot of people have jobs that serve not all their values, but maybe just their need for security, just their need for stability. And that's totally great because that's what they've chosen for those values, their job to serve those values. For me at the time, though, I decided that I wanted to serve something more. I wanted to serve one of my greater values of health, which is what I discovered at the time. And so by creating more positive work environments and going back and getting my doctorate and building a business and working for companies, like, I was able to serve that value. If I ever felt that that value was getting a greater percentage, or maybe that my job was getting a greater percentage of my value or my life overall, I made adjustments. Like, I remember very specifically, no, I can't stay past this 6 p.m. meeting. Well, why? Because I don't want to. You're going to stay here until 11 o'clock at night. I have other commitments. You didn't tell me about this beforehand. This is my choice. Now, is that boundary good or bad? Doesn't matter. It's what I chose. I chose it because I wanted to put myself above the things that I thought were important to me, because I was more important than them.
Not caring and finding a way to get that balance right with work, because it's really not an easy thing to do. It feels like the advice that's out there to live like in a healthy sort of Zen way is to like not care so much about all kinds of things. But then it feels like you have no, I don't know what to do. I feel like I lack purpose. I don't know how to invest in anything. And so what you're saying is you actually can find a way to make your work support the values that you care about, but it doesn't become all consuming. It's all just in support of living a way that you want to choose and remembering that you have the choice, so that you don't feel kind of beat up by the world or the choices that you've made.
When it comes to work overall, you have to decide how much you want work to be part of your life. And we don't tend to do that. We see an email come in, we think we have to answer it. We have an endless to-do list that we think we need to finish, but it's endless. Like, you brought this concept that work never ends. Work is never actually supposed to end. If work ends, you're out of a job. We hope work shouldn't end. And we need to, one, understand our values, understand how we want to live those values in our job. But then we also have to understand, like, what is our limit? What are we getting paid for? And too often, professionals, especially as high performers and high achievers and people with high potential and are trying to strive, and even new managers that feel like they have something to prove, think that they're getting paid to finish everything instead of just finish some things. And generally, when I work with a new leader, and you probably see this yourself, you go to one of them and you go, what are your three top priorities? What do you get graded on every quarter, every year? And they can't give me the answer. Or they give me the answer, and then I go, great, what did you work on today? and it has nothing to do with their priorities. And so it's not just like, okay, so figure out what you care about and then you're good, you're set. Like figure out your values and you're set. No, there's some just aspect of also just like strategic working. Just like if you go play a sport in soccer, there's a time limit. There's rules. There's a position that you play. And if you tried to play every position or you just kept playing, eventually you're gonna burn out and collapse. Or you're not gonna win because you're not playing the game anymore. And very often people in their careers stop playing the game, or they don't figure out what the rules are, what their position is, or maybe their manager isn't telling them, but they don't feel proactive enough or empowered enough to go get that information. Because sadly, I think we have there's just a leadership, epidemic in terms of providing just very simple feedback or coaching, or even defining priorities or objectives for an individual. And so we have to get that ourselves. And a lot of what I teach is self-leadership and being proactive in your career to get that information so you can create the rules for your own game, so then you can live a life outside of the game too. So you can, the referee can call the whistle, you can know that you're done for the day, and you can go live your life.
I mean, you got a lot wrapped up in there. One of the things I heard is maybe not having a clear priorities, or maybe not understanding or being on the same page with what's most important, or having the discipline and maybe even, chasing a shiny object. For individuals who, let's say, are relatively new in their career and they're not getting from their boss, like you mentioned, right? Say that they don't know what they're supposed to be focusing in on, or maybe it's not clear to them. Maybe, like you said, they spend all their day working on something when at the end of the day, it doesn't tie into their top three priorities. What advice do you have for them to help them kind of like manage up in those situations so they can learn to play by the rules, or not necessarily by the rules, but really focus on their time so they're making the most effective use of it?
Yes, this is very simple, but may seem very difficult for people. And strangely enough, for people that really respect their leaders and think that their leaders are just above and beyond amazing, generally the employees I work with feel like they can't, like they put the leader above them. So they can't go ask them questions. They can't go ask them for time. They're so busy. I can't do this thing. And so you don't always have this issue with like toxic leadership. Sometimes you have this issue with this issue with even great leadership. Your employees want to ask you questions, but they don't feel empowered to because they're afraid to, because they don't want to offend you or ruin anything. And so if you're a leader listening to this and you're just like, well, I'm a great leader, everyone talks to me and everyone loves me and they get what they need from me, just let you know there's things that your employees don't tell you. And so this is a great maybe even push for you to have these conversations or to clarify expectations and priorities. But if you're an employee and you don't know what you should be working on and how to say no to things that maybe you're overwhelmed and overloaded with work, very simple. Next time during your one-on-one, or if you don't have one-on-ones, that's a huge issue in itself, schedule a meeting with your manager. It can be 20 minutes. It can be 15 minutes. It can preferably be 30 minutes. It doesn't have to be that long. And say, I just want to check in. I want to understand a little bit more how my job helps you. So let's first talk about your goals. What are you working on this quarter? And then awesome. How do I help those? What are my main priorities? And then you can say, okay, just to clarify, at the end of the quarter, when we do our quarterly review or mid-year, when we do a mid-year or end of the year, whatever time frame you look at, what do you want me to have accomplished? What are you going to base my success off of? And have a conversation about that. And if your leader doesn't know, then it's a great opportunity for you both to figure it out.
I think that's really important. I actually had lunch with a woman the other day who was afraid to have that type of conversation with her leader, because she was afraid that maybe she'd put herself in a position where she would even lose her job, right? If she felt like she's calling it out and putting her leader on the spot. So what I hear you saying really is that, and I agree with you, as a leader, sometimes, hey, help us out. Help us out by telling us, what do you need to be successful, right, Ben? So, and that's what I meant to her. She ended up just leaving the organization and went somewhere else because she felt like she was unhappy in her role and she didn't feel like she had the opportunity to say anything. And so she just went to look elsewhere. So I think what you just brought up is a great note for all our listeners out there who are leaders, and they should reflect back on, are they missing opportunities? Are there blind spots where they should have be having more direct conversations with their direct reports.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I have two stories I want to share. One of them is of an individual that was afraid, kind of similar to you, of going to their leader and asking, what should I work on? Because they were afraid of being like, the leader being like, well, what are you working on? And so just be prepared to go and instead framing it of what I don't know what to work on, frame it as I have a never-ending to-do list and I do all of this every week. I feel like I'm not being as effective as I could. Where do you think I should spend my time? What would help you the most? Or what's most important for our team? What's most important for the quarter? So you're promoting yourself. You're talking about how great you are in terms of the work that you're doing and then getting direction. In terms of turnover, way too true. I've seen way too many high performers because working with these high performers, they're stellar. They're selected as leaders of the company, hence why they have a coach. And their leaders also are seen as pretty amazing in the company. And they have long-term plans for these individuals. And I'm talking to them and about half of them all want to quit. And they all want to quit because they're not getting the attention or the direction that they feel they need. And they don't want to offend their leader by trying to get time with them and schedule time with them. And it's terrible because the company actually is investing in these individuals and wants them to succeed in the company. And those individuals know that they're high achievers. And so those individuals also are kind of offended that they're not getting attention from their leader, but the leader thinks that they're fine because they're so talented and doesn't know what to talk about in the one-on-ones. Well, the one-on-one isn't for you, leader. It's for your employees. And you may think they don't need it, but have the meeting, talk for 15 minutes, talk for 5 minutes, and just show up. Give them your time. Because if not, they don't know how else they're going to get your time. And team meetings don't count. Randomly meeting them in the hallway doesn't count. Messaging them in Teams doesn't count. It needs to be one-on-one individual time with that person can bring anything. And if they don't need it, at least they have the opportunity to have it.
Well, certainly I think for all of our listeners to be able to have the confidence to step in, it is okay to have that meeting. A lot of times as a leader, I think you just don't know. It's not that you're opposed. You just don't know. But it's also making me think that I have, you know, people who report to me who are doing so well that it's easy for me to feel like, oh, we're in sync, and I just kind of forget about it. But that's really the time that I should be paying attention the most and making sure that we stop and just focus on them. It's because there's always going to be so much going on that it's going to be easy to not invest in that. I thought maybe we could pivot into something a little bit different because you do so many things along with all those letters behind your name. You can help in organizations in lots of different ways. I know one of the things that you help with is executive presence. So for those people that are out there, like executive presence to me feels like, what does that even mean exactly? And why do we teach it? Can you help people understand how should you approach this if you're wanting to develop your own career? The whole idea of executive presence and what are you supposed to do with that?
All I'm saying from executive presence is that you show up to a meeting like an executive and don't cower away from people that have a greater title than you. You make sure that people know that you exist in a way that leaders do so that you inspire followership. And you can do that without a title. And that's important, one, because it creates opportunities for you in the future for your career. It creates followership so people are more likely to listen to you and trust you. And if you want a promotion, you have to start acting like you have that promotion a year before you actually get placed in it. So generally, I first suggest, other than like the pillars around executive presence that I recommend, to go look at the executives in your company. Generally, there's a certain culture of leadership, and that culture is more important than any book at all. And so it's just like paying attention in a meeting. How are leaders acting? What questions are they asking? Who are they calling on? What are they wearing? When do they show up? How do they show up? What are they, you know, what are their values? What do they talk about? What are their goals? And start incorporating some of those characteristics. Like pick one, try it out. It's crazy. You go in a meeting and someone, and you got half the people that want to get promoted into a position, but they're all, I mean, it's a remote world. I get it. I wear t-shirts when I'm on a call. But if all the executives are wearing button-ups, maybe you should put a button-up on. You have to look like first a leader in the room and show up like a leader to be perceived as one. And the other pieces are just, are you communicating your vision and your values? So when you show up to a meeting, people know that you stand for something and you're consistent. That builds trust and credibility. The piece is, you know, playing into that credibility piece. Are you following up on what you say you're going to do? Are you calling out problems and offering solutions for things that aren't even your responsibility? So are you showing an investment? Are you caring about the company? Again, that's part of credibility. And then do you have the knowledge? Do you have the skill sets that like generally are perceived or you know about the industry? Are you an expert in your job? Do people know that you are that kind of like learner mindset? And the final piece is just presence. So are you taking everything that you know and who you are and you're engaging? And I can't tell you, and you work with these individuals, leaders, and you don't see this from an executive. And if you do, that executive is probably heading out. They're engaged. They're asking questions. They're calling on people. They're connecting the dots. It's so easy to multitask when we're remote. And I've seen, you know, you go into a meeting too, and sometimes in person, everyone's on their iPads or their computers not paying attention. If you're in a meeting, that meeting is the most important time of your day. And you have to show that it is. And so also just your general presence is really important. You know, outside of like what your camera is like, what your microphone's like, all that kind of stuff.
There are so many things in there, Ben, that our listeners hopefully wrote down and take away from it. One of them, I hear essentially what you're saying is personal brand is really important, right? You know, you gotta be mindful and you gotta really think about what do you want your personal brand to be. And you gotta be in the moment, you know. Like you said, if you're on calls with an executive and they've got a suit on and you look like you just walked in off the beach, put yourself in their shoes. What are they possibly gonna be thinking about you? And I'm not saying that you need to be a kiss ass to them, but you wanna understand, like, you know, how you're showing up in your organization. And I really like what you talked about a couple of minutes ago was if you want to get a promotion, don't start when a job gets posted. Get yourself out there 8 months, a year in advance, because what I've seen too and what I've kind of helped and coached people with is you want leaders to be aware that you want to advance in the company. And sometimes you have to remind them that a couple of times, right? And just like, hey, and show them the value you have. And there's so many things there, especially in a remote world. Another recommendation I have, and I know you think about this, is try to find opportunities to be able to meet with them in person as well, if you can, you know, to get in front of them and make yourself seen. So I think that there's so many great areas there. And one of my questions around it for you, and I know you talk about this in your book, and I really want to talk about your book, is building trust. Because I think building trust, because if you want to build credibility, you got to build trust. How does somebody, especially somebody newer in their career, build trust with senior leaders?
So the best way to earn trust is to give trust. So you want to actually be open and you want to not be skeptical of the people around you. And if you're trying to actually earn the trust of others and you are trusting, so you're open and honest and direct and not operating from a place of fear, you then have to do what you say you're going to do. So by following up, you earn their respect. You need to show solutions to issues that are popping up that you notice. So kind of the same things I've talked about executive presence. You need to basically understand their goals. I mean, if you can figure out someone's goals, and they talk about this in the first 90 days whenever you're onboarding to an organization, but it's only honestly just a tip that I would provide to anybody. If you can get some wins for somebody else, if you can figure out what they're working on, and this happened a lot actually during COVID where companies needed people that knew Zoom. Like the people that taught everybody Zoom automatically moved up in that organization real fast, because I even experienced that. I did a whole organization-wide Zoom training when it wasn't my job, and you betcha, like the CEO was pinging me, asking me questions on how to use that tech and saw me as an expert. I changed my brand real fast in that company. And so if you're following up, they realize that you're on their side. So you kind of, you're their champion in a way, and you're trusting first and showing them how you want to be treated. Then generally you're going to start earning trust. So, because if you want to think about what destroys trust, well, thinking that you're working against me, or talking badly about me, or I can't count on you. And so you do the opposite of those. And then if you're thinking about executives in a company, their life generally is a huge part. Like their brand identity is a huge part of that is the organization. So if they see you championing the organization in other ways, maybe I don't recommend this all the time, but posting about the company, making new connections for business development, even though it's not your job, maybe even doing some sourcing and recruiting from people that you know for referrals. Like that kind of stuff can really make a difference.
When I was growing up, the way that you succeed is you kind of go above and beyond. And the people that you're trying to impress are the ones who really threw too much into the company. Like they did identify themselves and they, you know, had to do all the crap jobs until they finally got to where they are. And so it feels like the kind of advice, which is put yourself in their shoes, anticipate, you know, what they need, get them some quick wins, try to, you know, take their perspective. And if you really get good at that, it starts to get to be easy to know how to manage up and influence. But at the same time, I sort of feel like I'm telling people who are like, why does it have to be all about me doing everything for them? Like, where's some of the love coming in the other direction? And I feel like that's a hard one to talk about because the essence of empathy, it should go both ways. Like really your leaders should be thinking about you too, but you still also have to think about other people and try to be empathic. Are you seeing any of this tension in the world around like kind of, you know, this managing up and younger generation or not?
I think there's a person for every single type of example we want to create. There's the person that does their work too much and only does their job and no one knows about it and doesn't care because they're not doing anything outside of the scope of work. There's the person that does everything but doesn't get anything back, so maybe becomes resentful. There's a person that does everything and then gets promoted. There's a person that knows the manager and so gets promoted anyways. There's a leader that offers support. There's a leader that doesn't offer support, etc. And I think we see everything. It's if we throw in the concept of if you want to be promoted, start acting like you're promoted. So do the job now. At the same time, know your values and build proper boundaries and expectations around yourself. So you're not doing everything because you don't need to do everything. You do the main priorities and then you do the things that are important to maybe get that other job. And so then you still have time to go live your life, go on your dates or spend time with your partner, or go to the gym, whatever you want to do. And so it's like you do the extra stuff, but it really isn't extra stuff because you can do it within the allotted time of the day if you have proper boundaries and live towards your values. And if your manager isn't returning that energy, you're empowered enough to first try to lead up, manage up. Maybe that doesn't work. So then you schedule a skip level or you connect with one of their peers and you start building your visibility and networking across the organization. So you can maybe craft and pivot when an opportunity comes up. Never talking bad about your manager. Always still trying to support them. Always giving them the benefit of the doubt. Because a path is going to close, but because you feel confident in yourself and you know your values and you have a good mindset around work and what you control, what you can control, you go find the other door that's open. You find the path of least resistance in your career.
Good. It really has so much to do with the way you do it, right? Because it's a yes and thing. You want to go above and beyond, but you also have boundaries and you have values. And if you're doing that correctly, it actually is, there is a sweet spot in there.
I don't know about y'all, but there are people that overwork 100%. But if they're overworking, they're generally overworking on the wrong things that aren't going to lead them to career development. And then there's a large majority of people that work about 2 to 3 good hours a day. I don't know what your perception is on that. And this is like not being in meetings. Maybe someone has back-to-back meetings all day, but they're not really like doing the work. They're like, okay, sitting in a meeting, talking, you know, and complaining about not being able to eat lunch. I think we tend to, and this is, if someone tends to be overworked, I ask them, list everything that you're doing and where you spend your time on during the day, because I generally half the time they're not.
What is your thoughts and your opinion on somebody who's maybe a full-time employee and they're putting in 2 to 3 hours a day? Is that totally fine if they're achieving the goals that they have or crushing their goals they have? Or should they be someone who's like achieving the goals, but should also be proactive with their leadership saying, hey, give me more to do. I can add more value here.
I think it depends on your goals. I talk about self-leadership and personal empowerment, and I don't judge anyone's decisions what they want to do. So we're not getting paid to work 40 hours a week. We're getting paid to do our job.
Which is even more important in remote work, right? Where you can't see people all the time. Like I said, I don't want to interrupt you on that, but that is something that we try to share with leaders all the time is it's not clocking in and clocking out. It's setting a clear directive and goals and having them do that, get it done.
And everybody works differently. Is it fair that I can do something in 30 minutes that takes someone 8 hours? Is it fair? Do I then get 8 times the work because of that? And so as I think we have, it's a very fine line. And I think instead of basing it on hours work, we have to base it off of goals and impact to the organization. Because I bet you, if you had an employee, just use sales as an easy example. He came in, he worked 1 hour a week, but he sold 100 times more than everybody else at your company. If he sold 2 times more than everyone else at your company, you let him work that hour a week and you keep him employed.
It does feel like there's some of that just anxiety about not being able to see what people are doing and stuff that creeps in. But I agree. I think when people aren't focused on what are they supposed to achieve, not just the hours. If you focus on hours, everything gets so transactional, and I think you get worse results and kind of demotivate people. It's not that you don't consider hours at all, but you have to focus on what the prize is. Hey, Ben, let's talk a little bit about your book, Becoming Fearless. I want to talk about what inspired you to write it, but it's reminding me that Damon talks about this, which is great leaders aren't made. Great leaders aren't born. They're not made. They're in the making. And you didn't call this Become Fearless. You called it Becoming Fearless. So could you tell us a little bit about your book that you've got coming out?
Yeah, thank you very much. Underneath everything that I do in my work, it's just this concept of who are you and craft a life that allows you to live that without any sort of concern or worry or fear about what the consequences are going to be. Because the consequences are you're going to be happy. you might face some disruption and some disappointment, but overall, if you realize that you can control what you can control and take certain actions, you're still going to be on the path that brings you joy or fulfillment. And so Becoming Fearless is just, it's this journey that we're always on to understand that the things that happen outside of ourselves, or even the things that we feel, are just pieces of information for us to use, the tools again, to craft a path in the direction that serves us most. And so the book looks at our personal life and our professional life and kind of highlights an area that we tend to be fearful of and tend to hold ourselves back, and offers an action that you can take to work against that fear and to become fearless.
Don't you start with the mindset where you want to reframe fear into, instead of being fear, turn it into information? Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we have our thoughts and our feelings and our beliefs. And so generally what happens is we have a feeling, and that feeling is my heart's racing, or I'm sweating. I have like this gut-wrenching, tightness in my stomach or whatever, in my chest. And so then we think about those feelings, and this is how it happens very fast. We go, oh, heart racing, sweat things. I know this. Dark situation. So we think, then we have a belief. Oh, this means I'm in trouble. And we then label that as something that we need to now react to or be afraid of. And we do that at times in our life where we actually shouldn't be afraid. And so what we need to do is like figure out, what are we afraid of? Because generally that fear is preventing us from taking action and changing our life. And we think that on the other side of that change is something that we're going to enjoy more, but we're stuck in this belief of fear. And the first step we have to do is say, okay, everything I'm afraid of, if it's not going to physically harm me or kill me, maybe it's not fear. And adding that question is, maybe it's not fear, allows us then to really distance ourselves and analyze and think from a place of logic instead of fight or flight. If it's something that really need to be afraid of, like speaking up in a meeting, well, what if people judge me? Okay, wait a second. What if that's not fear? What if it's actually excitement that I have an opportunity to be heard? And it allows us to reframe that information into a way that serves us. Because if our goal is to become an executive, then how we interpret our information, our thoughts, or our feelings, our beliefs need to serve us. So we need to figure out, what is that belief to lead us to that goal that we need to now accept? And it takes time, and it's helpful if you have a coach, but it is literally the key to leading ourselves in the direction that we care about.
It's good. I like that. It's that whole idea of emotional granularity and getting more in touch with like, what is this feeling exactly? Like the difference between the panic of just, cortisol and stuff, it's going to rush through your system when you need to step up and speak in a meeting, or you need to speak on stage. So you're going to have that feeling, but that's not necessarily a bad feeling if you can differentiate it between like, I'm about to be eaten by a bear, which, I actually haven't had that feeling precisely, so I might not know what that exactly feels like, but I can imagine. There's a great quote in there that I wanted to ask you about before we wrap up here. You said, if you want to change how you feel, you need to stop accepting that you are what you feel. Super cool quote. Can you say more about that? What does that mean?
I was having this conversation the other day with someone about what is truth. It got real deep out of nowhere. And once we can accept that everything that we believe is just a figment of our imagination, we can go really far in life. And what you feel is just an automatic response to your current environment based on what you've learned over time. Period. Unless it's like, I need to breathe or something. Like it's part of your just like living system. And so you can choose to interpret how you feel in any way. And the problem is we tend to interpret the things that happen to us or around us in ways that don't serve us, going back to that belief piece. So if we feel nervous or we feel fear, but we then decide that every time we feel fear, that means that we have to do the thing. Like we give ourselves a rule, we eventually will end up not being afraid because we've now reprogrammed how we respond to the feelings of fear to action. And it's just the whole concept is don't believe your beliefs. And whenever you feel something, take the time to feel it. And whenever you think about something, take the time to think about it. And so if we want to actually not define ourselves by our feelings, then what we have to do, just like with beliefs, we have to pause and take the time to understand what we're actually feeling. A feeling is just a physiological response to a stimulus. It's not a fact. And people may be like, but Ben, that sounds so robotic. And I'm like, well, I mean, what is automatically responding to something you fear that might feel that might not be true? That's only true because it's something that you've experienced in the past. Well, that sounds like you could be living a lie. That's kind of scary. I'd rather take a second to reinterpret my feelings and my thoughts and let them serve me instead of control me. Just like creating a purpose and let it dictate my feelings and then letting it dictate how I believed of my value. I decide to first believe that I'm valuable and then interpret everything under that frame of reference.
Ben, as we wrap up here, what else would you like to share about your book that we haven't spoke about yet?
Well, it's going to be launching on September 17th. So if you're listening to this before, then jump on the email list at liveforyourselfconsulting.com. If it's after, you go check out a sample. It's an audiobook, ebook, paperbook. You can kind of do that quick read me. It's 65 strategies. It's separate strategies, each on a separate page. I don't think we need a lot to learn. You need an idea, and then you need to go do the idea. You need to actually go practice it. And so the book is made of 65 different practices and strategies that you need to take. I'm sorry, you may get inspired, you may be empowered, but just like go into a Tony Robbins workshop for 3 days, you're going to be pumped up for a couple months, but it might not change anything. It's all about what you actually do. Just like with leadership, the first time you do something, you're probably not going to be that good at it. You're going to give them feedback, probably not going to do that great. But if you do it 20 times, I bet you're going to be pretty great and change your life and change other people's lives.
I also know that you're really active on LinkedIn. Where can our listeners find you there? And I would assume too, if they do get a download of your book, they should share with you some tips that they learned from it, right? As you're getting ready to launch.
Yep. So before you do any of that, go review this podcast. So go immediately to wherever you're listening to it and leave a review. It's the best thing you can do for the show if you got some value from it other than sharing it with a friend. The next thing is go to LinkedIn, add Dr. Benjamin Ritter, send me a quick message. If you're like, I don't want to look up your links, just give them to me. I'm happy to give them to you and start the conversation.
Tons of great things. I feel like for me, the big takeaway is to be more intentional. It's kind of what we were saying about in terms of feelings. You aren't your feelings. You get to make a choice. And once you have that frame, that target in mind, how you actually live it isn't so esoteric. It's practical. There's real practical, clear actions that you can take once you decide to make a choice. And that's really what that book is, 65 very practical, actionable things that you can do. It's not just, magic, but you can take action. So thanks, Ben.
Ben, you're awesome. And Darren, maybe some of it is magic. Come on. You got to love magic.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyways, as Ben said, if you got value out of this episode, subscribe, like it, tell a friend. And Ben, thank you so much for coming out today. You were very generous with all your wisdom and insights for our audience. Until next time, stay curious and keep learning, everybody.